Hello and welcome to episode 68 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we're talking about $20 games, give or take a few dollars. We're in the holiday season, and that can mean you need something for stocking fillers, Secret Santa, or maybe just a small gift for a friend or coworker. We'll try to give you a few ideas by sharing some of our favorite $20-ish games. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jimblejam, George Gier, and Adam Harrison. And thank you to our newest patrons, Miles Clark and Cindy Lum. Also, a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Thanks, Josh. So we've been doing a number of things and giveaways and stuff. I have all the boxes in the car. They're going to be shipped out before I leave on a cruise. So we should note, we're recording this a little bit early. Mm-hmm. When people listen to this, I will be in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico again.
You just love the Gulf of Mexico.
It seems like a fun place to be. However, I will say that I'm looking forward to the convention. Because we're going on Dice Tower Cruise. So we're looking forward to that. It's just too close to everything else. And I was just like, getting used to relaxing. And I'm like, wait a minute. I'm not stressed out. I don't need to go on another vacation. Why am I going on a cruise again right now? So it's all right. But it's going to be fun. And everyone's going to have their boxes in the mail. So by the time you hear this, unless you're in Sweden, you've probably already gotten your box.
Ooh.
And if you are in Sweden, cross your fingers that it will eventually get to you. Also, I should announce I'm going to be at EverCon, which is a convention in Wausau, Wisconsin, the first weekend of January. And Josh, you're coming with me on this one.
I am.
Tickets are already purchased. So it's going to be Josh, Sydney, and I. I'm going to drive up in the middle of winter, northern Wisconsin. I'm going to hang out with the guys from the Gaming and BS podcast. Brett actually runs the con, so I'm going to go up there and run some games. So if you're in Wausau, Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin, upper peninsula, even Minnesota, and you want to come hang out with us, check it out, EverCon.
I would go, but I am no longer allowed to travel 45 minutes outside of the city of Chicago, according to my doctor at that point.
Yeah, I figure when you're within like 4 or 5 weeks of your due date, yeah. I wasn't going to like commit you to...
Nope.
Oh, I had no idea that was like a big like...
Yeah, once you hit 36 weeks, you're not supposed to go an hour from the hospital.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. Or, you know, just roll the dice and give birth at whatever hospital you're closest to.
Right.
That sounds like fun.
Your child could be a Wisconsin citizen. That's how that works, right? Yeah. We do have our current contest is still running. We're giving away Pandemic Legacy Season 2. We're going to do the drawing on the 19th, but the deadline to enter is on the 17th of December. So I will have the game boxed up and just missing an address. So if you win, I'm going to drop it in the mail as soon as possible. So hopefully I can get that to you before Christmas, at least before that weekend. That's going to be my goal. Again, if you're outside of the US, shipping is fuzzy. It's to
you
be honest,
have to pay for it.
Yeah. It runs, anywhere from $80 to $150 to ship something like outside of the continental US.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's crazy. Even something small is in like the $40 to $50 range.
Right.
It's insane to ship.
But the cool thing is we actually have started playing Pandemic Legacy Season 2 ourselves.
Yes.
Which I've got to say, already I'm excited about. I only played one round, but it feels good. I think they're on to another winner.
Yep. I think it's worth mentioning how the first game plays. It plays a little different than Pandemic. And this isn't a spoiler because you can't actually play the game without reading the rule book.
Without reading
this is all
in
the rule
books.
Yeah. So it's sort of as if you have quarantine cubes everywhere. And so the infections take away cubes instead of adding cubes until all the quarantine cubes are gone, in which case then you start getting infected. So it's kind of this reverse. You start out in what feels like a good situation until it's not.
Yeah, Chris already messed up our game. And Josh.
That's not entirely true. We can recover. We can come back from it. But anyway, Pandemic Legacy Season 2, it is awesome. You do not have to have played Season 1 to play Season 2. There's no continuing thing. There's no missing story or anything like that. You could play them independently. However, it does happen 71 years later, and you should play Season 1 if you haven't because it's cool. Even if you don't like Pandemic. I am not the biggest Pandemic fan, but Pandemic Legacy is definitely worth playing.
Yeah.
I had a friend who was really upset that she hasn't found someone to play Pandemic Legacy Season 1, and I was trying to think of ways that she could. And my suggestion was maybe to play just her and her husband and play two characters each.
Oh, yeah.
I would do that.
Yeah.
If you're both really into it, you could definitely just play two characters each. Because really it's kind of a group thing anyway. You know,
it's a co-op.
Yeah. You could play it by yourself, but it wouldn't be as much fun. No. You really want to share the story with somebody else. And being able to control multiple characters also gives you the ability to have, like, put some personalities into those characters as well.
Yeah.
So I like the two-player, two characters per player option.
It's amazing the memories you form. I mean, already I know that Kitty's never going to let us live it down, that we didn't listen to her good advice, and we're now in a bad situation.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's, she's terrible.
Like, at the end of the game, it's like, we would have scored so much better if you guys hadn't done that. So, and you'll know what that is once you win Pandemic Legacy Season 2. So Kickstarters, I have a couple of them. One of them I backed, Monster Slaughter by Ankama Board Games. This one looked really cool, and I liked the theme of it. So, as the head of a family of monsters, you hunt down and slay insufferable college kids holed up in a cabin in the woods.
That sounds awesome.
So, it's, you have, and it's kind of three-dimensional. There's walls in this cabin, and you have these kids in the cabin, and you guys are controlling monsters that are trying to go and kill the kids. I think kill the kids. It doesn't have like a sinister monster look to it. It has more of a cutesy monster look. But the theme is just
campy,
a little campy-ish. It's cartoonish. It's more cartoonish than like, oh, I'm scared. This one is the Kickstarter ended 16 hours after I backed it, but I wanted to bring it up because Monster Slaughter, check it out on Kickstarter. I'm certain pretty much all these Kickstarters have, after you can late backing and stuff like that. But if that theme sounds interesting to you, where you're just, you know, it's the reverse of what you would normally want.
I want to see some cards where it's like, girl goes into the basement on her own, stupidly.
That's what it looks like. It looks like there's all these separate rooms. It's like, let's split up.
Yeah,
it's like,
classic.
I want to see how that works. And then the other one I backed was Dawn of Pacemakers.
You're a cardiac surgeon. Yes.
Dawn of Peacemakers. This one's actually kind of cool. It's a story-driven board game experience with a continuing campaign. Try to reach a peaceful conclusion with your fellow adventurers. So really what this is it's a 12-scenario campaign. So it seems a little bit like Pandemic Legacy.
Legacy-esque.
Yep, so there's 12 stories. There's unlockables, so there's hidden things that you go through. And the premise is you have two armies that are fighting against each other, and you're not either of those armies. You're actually a group of characters that are trying to make the best outcome possible between the two armies. So you're playing cards that is kind of changing. So the armies have AIs is what they're going to do. And you're playing cards to change their AIs so you can kind of get them both tired of the battle around the same time. So they'll retreat with minimal losses. So you're kind of like,
interesting
diplomacy. Now, the cool thing about this one is, if you don't want to play the co-op version, that's fine, because there's a two-player version where you actually play the armies against each other. And then there's nobody trying to make peace, apparently. You just kind of fight each other. But this,
it's like two games in one.
Exactly. So it's like, it looks awesome. The backing for this is, there's only one level. It's $89. It includes 30 plus high-level detailed miniatures. The term I can't use, the anamorphic, animal, human animals type of thing. So it's like that kind of art again. But it looked really cool to me. So I'm like, all right, done. Plays 1 to 4, so you can play it solo, 1 to 2 hours, and it's campaign. So
I think it's anthropomorphic. Anthropomorphic.
Yes, that's so. A word. Right.
Yeah. Is that a word?
Yes, okay. That is animals with the characteristics of humans or humans with the characteristics of animals. Right. It's a blurry line there in the middle.
Yeah. Who knows? So one more, I don't think this is an announcement. This is actually like a post-announcement. So Josh just turned older as you listened to this like 3 days ago from what
I've heard. Yeah. It's tomorrow, but yeah, good.
Happy birthday.
So how was your birthday?
I'm assuming it was good.
Yeah.
It hasn't happened yet, but
what did you do on your birthday?
Again, I'm not entirely sure, because we had this rough plan where I was like, Gloria was like, what do you want to do? And I was like, honestly, just simple things. I was like, can we just like go and eat a steak and like go to an ice cream parlor. And even I was like, you know what? Stay a night in a hotel room. She was like, why a hotel room? Like, what does that even matter? We're in the same city. I was like, no, it's kind of cool. It's like luxury, yeah. You know, like a hotel room with a view of the lake or something like downtown. That'd be cool.
I love doing that. And then you don't feel guilty for not doing like the piles of laundry on your floor or the dishes in your sink, whatever it is. Yeah, like you're just, it's completely out of your line of sight. You don't have to worry about it. It's like a little vacation.
Yeah. Make sure you get late checkout, because otherwise it's, you get up and it's like, oh crap, we have to get ready and get out right away.
Yeah, that's a good call.
So, yeah.
It's going to be great.
I mean, it's a good thing you got late checkout, so you didn't have to get up really early.
I know. Someone told me about that before it happened, so.
Podcasting time travel. It's awesome.
Love it.
All right, take us into the next segment.
Indeed. Well, let's get some feedback about previous episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our other episodes, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found, tabletopgametalk.com/BGG.
I'm going to interject here just to note, I will be keeping up with the Board Game Geek forums for the input threads. I didn't do one last week or this week, and I probably won't do one next week just because of the chaos of all the holidays that have come around. But anyone who posts in that at the BGG forum, I'm certainly reading them and keeping up on that. So,
indeed. Well, from Dave, he says, Chris, Kitty, and Josh, just wanted to say hello. I first found out about you guys from your ad on BGG back in September, and then I went back to episode 1, and you three have been my company, in a non-creepy way, on my way back and forth to work ever since. Today, I just listened to your latest episode. Really enjoy your dynamic and how fun you three sound together. Also enjoy the episodes with your SOs.
So first, I am always impressed with people who go back and listen to 67 episodes and another 10 or 15 if you count the side chats. He did mention he skipped a few side chats here and there, which is completely fair
enough.
Yeah. But Dave, we're happy to have you aboard, and
good effort. Well, yeah. I'm impressed. I don't think I've done that with some of the, you know, I'm listening to like, you know, This Is American Life. I still don't think I've listened to every single one.
Yeah. Some of those things that you really can't go too far back, because it's like, you lose the things. But we try to be entertaining, I think.
Yeah. I think we're doing well. Apparently we are. So he also says, I do have a few things. Number one, from your last episode, I do actually know a few people who play cribbage. My in-laws in their 60s and my wife. I bet my mother would probably play as well.
I do still need to get a game of cribbage in. Maybe on the cruise.
I know. It's like all the rage. Apparently everyone's playing it. Especially people from, was it Minnesota?
Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan.
Northwoods.
Like woodsy places.
Yeah, northern Midwest.
Gotcha. So number two, Josh, you keep mentioning Gloria as your partner. Can you explain? Is it just that you've been together for so long but aren't married? Or is there some sort of dynamic that I've completely missed in life? Oh, love your accent, by the way, even if it is fake. Oh, he really has listened to it.
It's been a long time since we made a fake accent.
I know. Reference. Oh, man.
Yeah.
It happens to me all the time. Yeah. Like, I was in a bar the other day. Someone thought I was lying. So, but to answer his question, Gloria's partner. Well, this is like kind of almost like a little story attached to it. I mean, we are married, actually. We are legally married. But the thing is, neither of us are that into marriage. I mean, I happen to be from the UK and Gloria happens to be from America. And a year and a half into our relationship, we were like, well, we want to go to London. How are we going to do this? And we were like, oh, we're going to have to get married. And Gloria's, I think, more anti it than I am. I'm very apathetic. I'm like, I would not want to spend money on a party for other people. I'm like, I'd rather travel the world than do that. But Gloria's more like, well, you know, if you look at the history of marriage, it was more about like a transfer of property. And in Slovak culture, parents are Slovak. When you put OVA on the name of the woman, it should be, say, Yanikova, when you marry a Yanik, then that OVA means property of. So it's almost that traditional sort of old school, you know, culture that she knew. It kind of has that flavor to it still. So I think she's a bit more anti it. But, you know, we're just kind of like, you know, we don't want to do this as a thing. We're not that bothered. We're just a piece of paper to us. But we love each other anyway. And so to be together, we have to do this thing. So we kind of got married in spite of marriage. But, you know, we love each other just as much as any married couple.
So I just think it's funny because partner is an interesting, and it's a word that's come up more recently, like the last couple of years in America. You know, apparently it's more common in other countries to use it to signify a significant other.
Yeah.
I usually use the term significant other, regardless of gender.
Right.
Here, it's more common to hear partner for same-sex couples. Yeah. So,
oh, that's happened to me definitely. we were going to the Art Institute, I think it is. It's the one in Chicago that's just off Michigan Avenue, and I ran in because there was this big line. And I was like, and just asked the person, we've booked tickets, and my partner's standing outside, just wondering if we can go straight forward. She's like, yes, if you've got tickets, you can go straight in, but get him to come in quickly because you're already late. And I just started laughing, and I opened the door, and I was like, Gary, come on, Gary. Chloe always makes this joke that she's Uncle Gary to the niece and nephew.
Yep.
It's great. Uncle Gary's here.
A mystery solved.
Yeah, she told the magician her name was too at Sydney's Bachelorette.
She loves it. Yeah. She loves pulling that card.
Spencer's, so it's Kitty and I and Spencer all bought this building together. And so Spencer would refer to me as his partner in the building. And people would always like, but wait, I thought you were married to Kitty. So it's a very ambiguous term. It's a good question.
Right, yeah, it's good. I'm glad we've set this record straight. So number three, he goes on, thanks for all the great game suggestions. I don't have nearly the collection that Chris does, but my games are getting up to about 100. I'd really love to find another great dungeon crawler. Sci-fi themed would be awesome. But I just haven't found much out there right now. Any thoughts? A friend suggested Sign Tempor. I haven't heard anything about it. Any good word or other suggestions?
So I don't know much about it either. I do know that I backed it on Kickstarter. So eventually I'll have
it'll
it.
It'll show up.
Yep, and it'll show up.
The video was enticing enough for you to click buy.
Exactly. I also just backed Core Space, which I talked about last episode, which is this three-dimensional dungeon crawl. That one's PvPvE, so player versus player versus environment. So it's almost like Arcadia Quest in space is kind of what
I was going to say. That sounds like Arcadia Quest.
Until I get a better feel of the gameplay, that's what I'm going to imagine it as, because you are controlling three different space marine type dudes, and you're going through and fighting against the bad guys in the space station, and you're going to solve missions, which is exactly Arcadia Quest, just in space.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that one. That one apparently is playable solo too. So you can actually play the scenario solo. So if you're looking for like a solo dungeon crawl, you can do that. So
nice. Yeah. Sounds good.
All right. So we have another email from Michael Yanikowski. Josh did pronounce my name perfectly, and I hope I just did it the same. not everyone does, even though it's pronounced the same way it is spelled. We actually met at the Tiny Epic Western game at Gamehole Con. I was the gunslinger from Wisconsin.
Hi, Michael.
I decided to listen to your podcast. I listen to other game podcasts, but yours is different. You three don't just talk about games. You also talk about intangibles and the other game podcasts don't talk about, like getting non-gamers to play, making time to play, or turkey.
Yeah, turkey's the most important part.
Thank you for your different perspective.
I didn't want to be just another podcast. Now, we do talk about games from time to time. There's certain episodes. Today's episode, we're going to talk a lot about different games, but a very tight, specific category, and not just like the newest hotness, which actually that would probably be a good topic, the newest hotness. We'll probably do something early in January, like our favorite games of 2017, those types of things. But yeah, I really like the topical stuff. It's just more fun for us to do. Miles sent us an email following up from his last email where he said he wanted to live up to my example and we were unsure if that was good or bad. He says, there was no sarcasm in my last email. I am currently packing to move, and to put things into perspective, I do miniatures as well as board games, and I have 4 pallets, 1.2 by 1 meter by 2 meters high, solid packed with games related items. That might be more than me, I think.
Whoa.
It's hard to say because it's in impressive. America, we don't use meters.
We don't use meters.
So we have no idea what that measurement is.
Hold on. I'm going to convert it to yards. So it's about 3 feet by 3 feet. Well, maybe 4 feet by 3 feet by 6 feet. We're pretty close. I think, Miles, you might be really close. I did give away half my collection, and I think I brought, by that definition, at least a pallet to Gen Con to give away. Maybe a pallet and a half. But yeah.
All right. So,
Actually, he does continue on. He says he does get analysis paralysis like Josh. He just wants all the points and goals of the game. And he says he's going to leave us a great review on iTunes. Even though he doesn't use Apple, he likes us enough where he's trying to figure out how to leave a review
on
iTunes.
That's amazing.
Good luck to you, Miles.
Yep.
I'm glad he gets AP as well.
Yeah.
I'm not the only one.
All right. So this week we have a quick question. This is a question that won't fill an entire show topic, but we think is interesting nonetheless. Today's question comes from Joe. What do you think is the best time or season to launch a Kickstarter for a card game?
So I'm assuming Joe has a card game that he wants to launch a Kickstarter
for. That's what I was assuming, yeah.
But this question leads to like a bigger topic. When is the best time to launch Kickstarter? When's the best time to like look on Kickstarter to back things? And 2 years ago, there were probably seasons where you could look at. Like people are more apt to back things, you know, maybe not right after Christmas. Maybe just before Christmas, but they're not really going to get it right away. So then maybe you want to do it more in the spring or the summer and fulfill it by December so that you can miss that date and whoever bought it for a Christmas present won't actually have it until March. That's because that's how Kickstarter goes.
Yeah. I've learned the lesson the hard way many times not to count on Kickstarters as gifts.
Yes.
Ever.
Always assume Kickstarter is going to be late. And that's not saying that's a bad thing. It's just saying people are more optimistic and there's a lot of things outside of their control. So if you were to launch something right now, we're early December. If you were to launch something right now, would you have the same attention as you would get in a few months? I don't know. I think people are always looking on Kickstarter right now. There's literally about 100 board games a week that go up on Kickstarter. Most of them just fall away. Not necessarily board games, card games, dice games, you know, just non-digital games. Most of them just fall away. Half of them aren't even funded. The best thing I can say is build hype before you do the Kickstarter. I've talked about it. I think a few months ago, I talked about a game I was working on, and I was just talking to Sydney about it today. And she's like, did you ever enter that into the contest? I'm like, no, it wasn't a bad game, but it wasn't a great game. And I don't want to go out with just a mediocre game just to kind of throw something out there. So, but building that hype first. So for us, like, I kind of have an audience and I can say, hey, I have a Kickstarter out there. And I think that like 4 or 5 people might go out and back the Kickstarter just because they heard it on the podcast.
Yeah.
Hopefully more than that. But I can probably guarantee four or five.
Yeah.
But I don't want to take advantage of that with just a mediocre game. Right. So Joe, if you are trying to launch a game, build up some following around it before you hit Kickstarter. Start tweeting about it. Bring it to conventions and play test it. Take pictures of that. Put it on Twitter, Facebook. You know, basically get some hype out there. So when you do put the Kickstarter up, you have people that are already excited and are going to come back it, which will then build momentum.
I would say, though, that January, February might not be your best bet because people are still in that Christmas spending hangover period of time. There's not a lot of free money floating around in a lot of people's lives. So. Yeah.
Well, and also right around November when Essen is up, it's like this is when all the big companies are doing their big game pushes. So people are distracted by commercial games.
That's exactly what I was thinking. In my head, I was thinking not when an Eric Lang game is out.
Yes. You definitely want to time it. So you're, and it's hard to know sometimes, but like a Cool Mini or not. Kickstarter. Try not to line up with the same one of those. Gloomhaven 2, it's going to come out at some point. Don't line up with that one.
Right.
But maybe do, because a lot of people are then at Kickstarter and they're you know, they have related things.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So
don't have all the answers.
Exactly.
But all if you are kickstarting something, let us know so we can check it out.
Exactly.
Yeah. Might and get a mention on our
send
show.
Us an email.
Yeah.
Yep. And if you want me to check it out, I am more than happy, and this is just an open invite until it becomes too much. But I am more than happy to read rule books and read rules and give you my honest feedback on the game. I might not get it to the table depending on the state of the rule book and the state of the prototype, but if you want me to just look over the rules or something, I have no problem giving my feedback on there. And don't worry, I'm not going to steal your rules. Okay, but let's get on topic before we run out of time, because...
In this episode, we're talking about some of our favorite games that cost around $20. These are often times smaller games, easier to learn and quick to play. Some might even call them filler games, but we're going to call them great games to give as gifts. So without further ado, let's talk about some games.
All right, who wants to go first? I took notes.
I also did take notes. Fine, I'll go first.
All right.
Bang the Dice Game.
Oh.
Boom. I got in there before you. You wanted to talk about it. But yeah, you introduced me to it on the cruise. I hadn't played it before then.
Oh, you didn't play with me on the cruise.
You played
with other people.
I played with Jen and Mark and some other peeps. Yeah, it was great fun. Yeah, so this is a small box game. Basically, there's a little bit of social deduction in there. I think it plays up to maybe like 5 or 6.
Yep.
I think we had 5. And there's like a sheriff and a deputy and some outlaws and some fugitives. And basically, the outlaws are bad guys that want to kill the sheriff and the deputy. And then the fugitives, I think, are in the middle. They're kind of like a bit renegade. They could kind of help the good guys or the bad guys, up to them.
The renegade.
Oh, sorry, that's it.
Is going to help the good guy or the bad guy, because yes, the renegade wants all the fugitives to be dead.
That's it.
And then he wants to kill the sheriff.
I'm glad I've got your expert eye here. I've only played it once, but it was such a good game. So you've got these dice, and there's, you know, it's a custom dice. So there's like arrows on there and some Gatling gun things and some dynamite. And there's kind of like an element where you're rolling a bunch of dice and you want certain dice to come up because they'll allow you to shoot people or do cool things like get rid of, you know, wounds or something. But you can also re-roll some of them as well. And this is where the kind of push your luck element comes in, because you're like, well, I want to re-roll these 2 dice because they didn't come up too good, but then I could just hurt myself even more.
Because there's dynamite and arrows.
Yeah. And so you're like, oh, but you know, so there's that tension. But then there's also the kind of like, you know, trash talk around the table, because you're kind of like, I'm the renegade now because I started shooting you or whichever role you are, and you kind of, you know, trash talking amongst each other. So that's good fun too. So and it played like maybe 15 minutes or something.
Yeah,
like it was real quick and really fun.
Yep, I would say that this is I completely agree. Now, what I'm going to do with many of these games, maybe not all of them, but many of them, is just look it up on Amazon as we talk about them.
Yeah.
So Bang the Dice Game, the original one, is for $13.50 on Amazon.
Yeah. Wow.
The expansion, which adds in, like, I think 4 new dice, is $17. So it's even more than the base game.
Yeah,
but you can also get Bang the Walking Dead Dice Game for $20. So if you like The Walking Dead and you want that theme, it's basically the same game, just with different icons and a different theme. So nice. I agree. What do you got for us, Kitty?
All right, I'm going to go with Herbaceous.
Yes. So we only briefly covered this, so you got to go into more detail now.
Okay, so Herbaceous is a set collection, press your luck game, where there's kind of 2 pools of cards that you are trying to collect from, and you are trying to fill 4 different categories. So you have like different pots that you're planting your herbs in. So you're trying to get one of your pots wants all of the same kind. One of them you're trying to fill with all different kinds. One of them you're trying to fill with special herbs. There's ones that you can only score in your glass jar. And I can't remember what the 4th one is now. But
yeah,
something cool.
Yeah, it was cool. It's fun. So these cards are coming out and you can choose where to put things. But somebody else could collect them before you get to them. So it's tricky.
Yeah, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, there's a pressure luck aspect to it. It reminds me a lot of like Sushi Go-ish for like its scoring type of things.
Because
you have different
sure.
types of sets you're trying to collect.
Yes.
And I think this is from, and it's loading, it's Pencil First Games.
Yep.
So this one on Amazon is $18.83. Mm-hmm. It's Herbaceous, H-E-R-B-A-C-E-O-U-S. Someone should
take herbs that you cook with.
Like herbs that you cook with. Someone should take notes so I can put these links in the things. But Terrence will link all of these on Board Game Geek. So if you go to Board Game Geek and look
what
at this
podcast.
What the
hell podcast, would we do without Terrence?
I don't know.
We would have no links whatsoever. And now that I've said that, I'm sorry, Terrence, I've committed you to doing it. But this one's great, and it's super, super fast to learn.
And it's interesting. I think a lot of the games that we're going to be talking about are going to be either 2-player or more dice game.
Or group.
Like 4-player games. I don't know. I think you don't see as many of them in this range.
Yeah. Well, and this one's kind of cool. Yeah. Well, this one's kind of cool to like give to someone who likes cooking or gardening. It's
yes.
like, okay, I like gaming, you like gardening, here's this middle ground game, have at it.
Yep.
You know, it's a, and like I say, it's very fun to play.
And it's pretty.
I'm going to go, I'm going to cheat a little bit because a lot of my games, I'm going to give like two different games, but they're kind of the same thing. Right. So we've talked about this before, Fantasy Realms by WizKids. This is a hand optimization game. So every card in your hand works with every other card in your hand. Oh, well, presumably you want it to work with every other card in your hand to give you a maximum score for your hand. You play until there's a certain number of discards on the table, depending on the number of players, and then you score your hands. You play a number of rounds, add it all together.
I've got a couple of these games on my list, but I think they're a bit too far down the list. But yeah, I know the kind
this
of
one, and this one's great if you are giving this to maybe someone who likes role-playing games. They like Dungeons & Dragons, but they're not as into board games or card games. This is a really good one for that. This $20 games episode is turning into a $20 gift games episode, but I think that's sort of the point.
Well, the topic started because my family does a grab bag gift giveaway every year where everyone comes to a party. So last year we did a page-a-day calendars. Everyone brought those. And this year, it was bring a game for $20 or less. And now I feel all this pressure because I have a game podcast and they all know that. And they're all going to be like judging the games that I bring. So I wanted some input. And
some good chicken inputs.
Yeah. So I wrangled you guys into this.
I like it.
I'm loving it.
So Fantasy Realms. Now there's another game, very, very similar concept called Tides of Time by Portal Games.
And they had another one come out, wasn't it, as well? Oh, what was it called?
There's a Cthulhu re-theme
of it. Yes, that was it.
Which is still Tides of Time, but it's just a Tides of Time horror or something like that.
I saw some review and they were like, I like this one better than Tides of Time.
But, the theme is probably a little bit more there. So what Tides of Time is, so Fantasy Realms has a deck of close to 70 cards or so.
Yep.
Tides of Time has 18 cards. And you're not trying to optimize your hand. It's a drafting mechanism. But you play one card in front of you, and you're trying to optimize the cards that are played in front of you. It's the same.
Is it like Sushi Go?
It's way more like Fantasy Realms. So there's five different suits, and there's three cards of each suit, plus three cards of no suit. And you're just trying to put, you know, first round, you put four cards in front of you. The second round, you keep one of the first round. Then you play five cards. You keep two. And then you play six cards. And once you're done, it's a two-player game. And once you're done, you score the tableau that you've created.
Isn't there some weird thing as well where you, like, don't take part in one trick as well to try and score your cards? Or is that
the
reskin?
No, this one, well, at least the version I've played.
Yeah, see, I think there is something. If anyone's listening and has played both of these games, I think the other game is more than just a reskin.
I was almost going to pick them both up because I was out Black Friday shopping and that's when I picked this one up.
The other one I think has a new rule to it. This is what I'm talking about, where you actually sit one of the tricks out and you have to like do some scoring at that point. And I didn't watch enough of the review to know exactly what it is, but if anyone's listening and played both, let us know if there is more rules to
it. Or if Josh is describing a different game, let us know what game he's describing. Speaking of Josh, describe a different game.
Oh, yeah, indeed. Well, I've gone for Not Alone, which is a one versus many that we all play together. And it's kind of like a weird like sci-fi one versus many, almost like hide and seek with bluffing involved. It's really cool. Basically, there's some cards out. And they all these, let's say there's 10 cards, I think there is, and all these cards have different things that allow the many to do things to try and get their ship off, or get the supply ship to take them off the planet. And this alien that lives on the planet is trying to guess which card they're going to pick on any given round. If the alien guesses right, then they take some of the life power away from the humans, and then the alien gets closer to winning. And so it's this really like tense, like, oh, okay, which one am I going to pick? Which one is the alien going to think I'm going to go for? And the alien is one of the people playing. And so it's like, oh, Chris thinks I'm going to go for number 6, so maybe I should go for number 5. But maybe he knows I'll do that, and so I better double bluff him. And so there's a lot of tension and kind of trash talk around the table again. But it's got some really cool strategy to it, because me and Kitty were kind of trying to like let each other know, like, but subtly, like, okay, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
Or maybe we try and like lure Chris away by saying, I'm definitely going to do this. I'm going to take the hit. You know, I'm going to go for number 1 and Chris is going to get me, but you go and do something else, just so he couldn't get both of us. So there was some cool strategy to it again. And again, easy to pick up and quick to play, like a whole game.
Yep.
Really fun to take turns who gets to be the one. because I think we played a couple rounds and Chris was the alien one time and I was the alien another time.
I like one versus mini games because of how easy they are to teach by being the one.
Yes.
So it's like, all right, I'm going to play the bad guy. You guys are playing the good guys. And once I'm done, now you have the hang of it. Now we can switch out.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to put someone who's never played in that role unless nobody's ever played before. Then it's fine. All right, Kitty, what's your next one?
All right, I'm going.
Oh, wait, we should say Not Alone. Should say the name of the game at the end. Not Alone. Yes. Ties of Time and Fantasy Realms were the ones I just talked about.
Okay. I'm going to go back to a favorite of mine. I've talked about it many, many times, so we won't get into too much detail. Odin's Ravens. Oh. Super fun racing game. Two players. Dynamic board where you can mess with the board and mess with the other player's movement with these Loki cards. It's a really fun theme, but very light on the theme. So
yeah. How many players was that again?
Two player.
Oh, nice. Yep.
But it's like a two player head to head. It's actually a really, really fun, just like couple, because it's lighthearted as it well. Is.
It's a quick play, yeah. But you want to play two or three in a row. Because once you play one, you're like, I want to see what I can do different. And the board changes each time. It's made out of cards. You can also change the length of the game by changing how many cards you deal out.
Nice.
So we were playing this at a restaurant one time, and we didn't have enough room on the table, so we just made it as long as we could on the table. Nice. It's really flexible and even has in the rules, like, you know, make this work for you.
Yeah. So. And one of the things I like about this particular two-player game is you are, if you lose, you blame your cards, not the other person, which it may seem, depending on how competitive you are, you can kind of
I wonder who you're talking about right now.
Well, just in general.
Me and Kitty. But.
Well, just in general, it's like you want to feel like I could have done better,
yeah.
Not like, oh, I just can never beat you.
The other person really.
Yeah.
Beat me over the head there.
Yep. So this one, Odin's Raven, really just kind of gives you that feel like, oh, it was luck of the draw, but I want to play again because I have an idea of how I can
make this. So I can play Kitty at this and she's not going to throw water on me if I beat her.
Nope.
Probably not.
Sweet.
Yep. So this one is $21.33 on the Amazons.
Not bad.
All right. So I have a couple more, of course. I'm saying them in pairs because they're very similar games.
Yeah.
And this goes against the two-player game thing. This is actually much bigger.
Ooh.
If you have a family that's social, especially if you have a lot of siblings and cousins in that, you know, preteen to early teen ratio, and you just want to, you know, give them something where they can occupy themselves all night long, Ultimate Werewolf by Bezier Games, which is basically Werewolf, or Witch Hunt by Level 99 Games.
Oh, man. Witch Hunt, so good. I know I say it every time we bring it up, but it's so good.
Now, we've talked about Werewolf and Witch Hunt both a lot, so I'm going to be very brief on it. Werewolf, Ultimate Werewolf, essentially expands the number of different roles you can be. Typically in Werewolf, you're either a werewolf, you're a villager, or you're a seer. With Ultimate Werewolf, it adds tons and tons of different roles. So, you know, you can complicate it as much as you want. The more roles you add in there, the more complicated it gets. I recommend starting light and adding things in. Witch Hunt even takes it up a step further in complication by giving you two roles. You have a good or bad, and then you have a job or ability on top of that. So there's a lot more management to that game, but there's a lot more depth to that game as well. So both of those games, I think, are really great. They both, Witch Hunt, I think, is about $20, and Ultimate Werewolf is like, you can find it for $20 as well on Amazon.
I would throw Avalon and Resistance into this same category.
Definitely. So, and actually, that is on my list as well, but it's easy to lump these in. So Resistance is a basic version of Resistance Avalon, which adds a few more roles to it. We've talked about this a few episodes ago. I like Resistance better than the Avalon modifications, but those ones are from Indie Boards and Cards, and also the same thing. They play from 5 to 10 players, so you have to have that range. I would say Werewolf and Witch Hunt, you have to have probably at least 7 to make it an interesting game. But that can play up to almost 20 players. Don't do that. 15 is a good upper end.
is the same true of Avalon and Resistance? Do you need that many people or not?
Avalon, you have to have at least 5. Mm. Avalon and Resistance are 5 to 10 players. Mm-hmm. So
okay. So yeah, because I've played both those and I really like the fact that you don't get eliminated in those two, which is great. I mean, Witch Hunt, you don't really get eliminated either. So I think Werewolf's the only one with elimination.
It feels a little bit like you're getting eliminated at the beginning.
It does, yes. Yeah.
So, but all of these games, all four of these games are social deduction games. So I think they're great in groups of, like, you know, just people who have no problem accusing each other of lying and deceiving and accuse.
Perfect for a large group of cousins.
Yep. So
at least my cousins, we played Mafia, which is the unbranded, you just play with playing cards, all the time when we were in like middle school, high school.
Yep. I picture kids in the basement just yelling and screaming and being obnoxious, and the parents upstairs saying, "Let's play that game too."
Nice. Well, I have got, now I don't know if you guys are going to rib me for this not being a board game or not, but I think it is still. But I'm going for murder mystery games in general, because I just love these. They're almost like LARPing in a way, because you're like, and like kind of role-playing games a little bit too, but it's more structured than, say, like a D&D session, because it's the case that, you know, you all get given a role, and, you know, you have a certain kind of, you get like a blurb of what your character's like, you know, their personality.
So wait, types. Do you have like an actual game you're thinking of? Like a title?
Like how would I Google this? There's so many, like, you know...
I'll find a title.
Murder on, like, you know, the Orient Express or whatever. And like, oh, I'm like Mr. Bigginsworth who owns the, you know, I don't know, coal factory. And then, like, then there's like this diva woman with like a long, you know, cigar. It's like set in the 20s or something.
Okay.
I'm just making all this up. There probably isn't a murder on the Orient Express.
Murder Mystery Party Games has a whole series of them. So right. It is... A Taste for Wine and Murder, A Murder on the Grill, Pasta, Passion, and Pistols are the ones that come up.
There's a very famous
when you search murder mystery dinner party game.
There's a very famous Office episode where Michael gets the whole office to play it because the company is possibly going bankrupt, and he's like trying to distract them all from this. So he's like, "We need to play this game," and like, you know, Jim's there being like, "Come on, we gotta like tell them the truth," and he's like, "No, we need to play this game," and they're all there like, you know, getting into character. And I did this for my birthday once when I was in Thailand and was there out there with a bunch of other young expats, and it was such a good fun. And you know, it's just this great social thing, and there is a puzzle to be solved there as well, because you're trying to work out who the murderer is, and as the game goes on you play different pieces of audio, sometimes it depends on the game, and you find out different clues, and you know you have actions you can take with other characters too. You can like accuse people of things. There's even one where you get to like try and shoot people and see if you kill them. So you can mix it up. It depends on the company and the kind of game you're playing, but it's one of those games where you really, really get into character. So if you have people that really love that kind of feel and love that role-playing element, like, which I do, then this is a great game to get.
Well, I'm going to say that you're talking about the Murder Mystery Party series, because there's actually a number of them.
That's what I meant. That's what I meant, because I just sort of naively thought everyone would kind of know these. Like, oh, yeah, murder mystery games. Like, I've
never actually played one.
Right.
I've played one.
Yeah, they're cool.
I actually have played a couple.
Now I want to play one.
I used to do this with my youth group when I was in high school. Would get together and do this.
Yeah.
So if anyone's listening and they want to get me a gift and, you know, you work with me or something, this is a great suggestion. I like this one.
Yeah.
There's at least four of them. If you search for Murder Mystery Party on Amazon, they retail for $24.99, but pretty much all of these are between $14 and $18. So
I'm surprised you've never heard of this. That's kind of
I've heard of the concept. Yes. I've just never actually played one.
Right.
And there are like companies that will come and like bring costumes and like do a really professional level, but I'm guessing that's not $20.
Yeah,
that's
no, yeah, but I didn't know that, and I'm now going to look
it's
into that.
Really
good,
cool.
Good shout. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to jump in front of Kitty because one of them that I was going to talk about is very, very related, and that's the escape room games.
Yes.
So there's a bunch of escape room games out there right now.
In a box, not like the experience.
Escape room in a box, right. Yeah. So the one that I would recommend as like giving to somebody would be the Think Fun versions of the escape room games, which are run around $20. They're a slightly bigger box, or Exit the Game by Cosmos. And there's a number of those that are the same thing.
Question. When you play it and you kind of figured it all out, can you then lend it to a friend and they can still play it?
So
you are usually cutting things up and destroying and writing on, messing things up.
So, and that's why it makes a great gift, because people feel less bad about cutting up something they got as a
Well, maybe kids do anyway. Yeah. Cutting up something versus something they went out and bought. So the Escape or the Exit series, those ones run around $15. I think they're like 13 or 14. And they're like a one-time play. And Escape the Room, those ones are also kind of, they're in a bigger box and they're a little bit more elaborate. Those are from Think Fun Games. And those ones are a little bit more pricey, but almost all of these are less than $20.
How easy is it to run one of these things? And do you have to have someone that kind of moderates it but doesn't play?
Nope. Most of them are just open and follow the rules.
Oh, sweet.
The hardest part about these is just understanding that everything goes. You could be needing to tear things up, like folding and like just really thinking outside the box in some cases.
Yeah.
And then others are a little bit more straightforward. So
I had a really hard time getting started. We did the Exit Egyptian one. I think it's like someone's tomb. That one was really hard. We had a really hard time just kind of figuring out how it worked. And then even then, I don't know.
Yeah. No, I know. I think I'd have trouble too.
So here's a general recommendation for when you're giving games to somebody, especially if you're going to be there, if you're giving it to like a family member. And a lot of times in my head, I think if I'm going to a family event and we're doing a gift exchange, if I'm giving a game in that situation, I almost always want to give a game that I know how to play, or at the very least watch a video on someone playing it so that you can help them with it. Because then you can say, okay, I've played this escape room, or I know how this works. So this is how it starts. If you have any questions, let me know, and I can kind of like get you past that initial hurdle. Right. Once you've played one, you kind of figure them out. You're okay. Yeah. But it's that first one that's a little trickier.
So I'll try a second Exit brand escape room before I give up on the escape room in a box games for my enjoyment.
Yeah, we played the lab one. We liked that one quite a bit.
Okay.
All right, what do you got, Kitty?
So you guys went for like big party games. I'm going opposite. I'm going Scheherazade, my favorite solo game. Nice. This one you have, there are tiles like when you play Memory when you're a kid and you flip the tiles. They're that size and shape, cardboard tiles. And they are numbered and they have a color. There's four colors and the numbers go probably like, I think it's 0 through 30. And you are trying to tell stories is the way it works. And that is, you put the lowest numbers to the left and you're trying to build up and you're trying to have the colors touch each other. So you're building this kind of puzzle and you get to do it in two rounds and score it. And it's really fun.
Huh, that sounds cool. Is there like an app version of that? Or
maybe I don't think so.
A fairly new game, right? Or not?
I found this at Origins this year. I'm not sure
how old it is, kind of thing. Yeah, no, I've heard about it and it sounded cool, but I haven't, this was the first time of really hearing it described. I just kind of heard the name and heard that it was a good game. But I am looking for like another kind of solo, like that I could put on an app or something. But yeah, that sounds kind of cool.
Yeah, this one's probably, I mean, it could go on an app. It'd be a very, very simple app to create. It touts itself as a storytelling game. It doesn't tell a story per se. It's pictures.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can tell your own story in your head if you want to. It also says that it's a one or two player game. The two player game is interesting. You're trying to do the same thing. The one player game, you have a little bit more control. I don't know if it's easier or not. It's just different.
I think it's more fun as a solo, but it is fun because you're playing two player co-op to build the same setup. It's a little bit trickier. Because you don't know what the other person, you basically have a hand of two tiles and you don't know what the other person has. So,
yeah.
Yeah. But it's fun.
Yeah. So it's spelled Scheherazade. Scheherazade. It's a $20 game, but it's cheaper on Amazon, only $17.
Nice.
All right. So I took out a turn, Josh. So it's your turn.
Oh, yeah. So I have got Wits and Wagers, which I believe is a fairly well known game. I haven't. Funnily enough, I haven't actually played it, but I've seen what's that Will Whedon show that he does?
Tabletop.
Yes, that's really easy to remember. But I saw their episode of it, and it looks really fun because essentially it's kind of like a trivia game where, you know, a question is posed to the table and everyone tries to answer it, and it's all based on numeric values, or at least the version I saw. So it could be like, you know, how many Indians came to the first actual Thanksgiving, you know, and so you all have to put a guest down and then they all get turned over and everyone sees everyone's guest. But then you don't actually have to know the right answer. You just have to bet some, like, bet so your kind of, you know, meeples on which answer you think is the closest or the most right. So if you think, oh, hang on, they clearly knew more than me, you can then change your answer. So there's a kind of cool, like, little interaction between the players, kind of like, oh, okay, I put two people and everyone else has put like 60. Maybe it was a bit more than two that turned up for the Thanksgiving. So then you've really got to kind of like decide, oh, where am I going to go with it? And it seemed like it was good, kind of like interactive kind of game. So yeah. I think it was one I'd enjoy. And I stole your copy as well once you were giving away games. So I can now play
it. So you now own it. Never played it.
I haven't played it.
So yet. I will say I played this game several times. There is now a new version of it.
It runs a bit more than $20 when you want to buy it new, yes. I want to say. But I kept seeing loads of like eBay versions for $20 and less.
Well, there's also a number of different versions. So Wits and Wagers Family Edition is a $20 game.
Right.
So it's easier questions, a little bit simpler rules. Then you have Party Edition, which is only $13 on Amazon, $25 retail. And then you have the Deluxe one. And I believe this is the newest one, which adds some extra things that you can do and extra ways you can bet. But really, I don't like trivia games. I don't like having to know the answer. Wits and Wagers is that exception because everyone is going to guess an answer. You're going to put them in a row and it's Price is Right rules. You want to get the closest without going over. Yeah. But once everyone has their answer out there, you can bet on any of them. And then if you can also, I think you get some bonus points if yours was the right answer, you get like a chip and you're putting right. poker chips on them.
Right.
So it is, it's a really great, easy, fun game. Great for a crowd. I agree. That's Wits and Wagers. All right, yeah. Kitty, take us to something that's not social. Maybe.
I'm going with another, I think this one's a two-player Catan the Dice Game.
Oh.
Is that two-player?
I haven't heard about this, really.
I'm fairly certain it's
it might
player.
Be
I looked at the rules a while ago but I've already forgotten. It's a little bit like Yahtzee and a little bit like Settlers of Catan. Right in the middle, you've got different ways you can score on a score pad. It actually has two different ways to play, so you can play side one or two of the scorecard, and it's really fun. You roll the dice to get your resources and you choose where you're putting them in your score boxes on the pad.
So it doesn't have the kind of trading mechanism.
No.
It's
much more you're playing your dice and scoring right. against your opponent.
Right. Cool.
I'm gonna raise you. So in that thing, and this is not a game I had on here, but just to add to it, Catan is a good game to give as a gift, regardless, because it's really easy. The original version. Right. But if we're going to go two players as well, Rivals of Catan is probably my favorite in the series. Oh. It is a head-to-head two-player game, and you're still building roads and settlements, and you're doing all of those things, but you're basically building up your own tableau, and you're trying to get to, I think, 10 victory points is Catan before the other person. But there's a lot of you have multiple draw piles that you can control, and you can, when you discard to the bottom of a pile, so you can actually control the piles. It's like, oh, I can't use this card right now, but I can use it later, so I'm gonna put it at the bottom of this shallow pile, and then later I can draw it. There's still some randomness in the dice and like how you get resources and stuff, but Rivals for Catan is a fantastic game. It is a game that if Sydney ever says, hey, let's go play Rivals of Catan, I'm like, all right, let's go do it. Like, nice. It's that kind of game where I'm never really hesitant to play it.
Wow.
It does require a decent amount of table space because your cards can get pretty big. They're all square cards, but they can still kind of spread out.
Right.
But it's not like if you're on the kitchen table, you're fine. But it's hard to play at like a restaurant or something. So, yeah, I would say, yeah, Catan the Dice Game and Catan, Rivals for Catan. Rivals for Catan is $25, but both of those are really good entries. Catan, you're running $45, so it's outside of our $20 range. But still, it's still a good gift. All right. There's so many, and we have so little time. I'm going to say Hero Realms by White Wizard Games, which is sort of, and I want to say sort of, it's sort of a skin of Star Realms. So Star Realms is a deck building space game where Hero Realms is a deck building kind of fantasy themed game. I think Hero Realms has a lot more depth. I like the theme better. I like the game better.
Is this just because you like fancy modern sci-fi?
Well, actually, I like sci-fi as well.
Right.
I just think that the sci-fi in Star Realms is less compelling to me.
Right.
And the game itself is less compelling to me than what Hero Realms does.
Nice.
So Hero Realms, you can actually start with like custom decks, where it's like I'm starting with a thief deck or I'm starting with a wizard deck. And that will actually change how you can play the cards. So it gives us a kind of asymmetric feel to it, where Star Realms, I'm certain in one of the 15 expansions, you can probably do something like that, but Hero Realms from the get-go was like that. There's also campaign expansion for it, and like a solo expansion where you're fighting like liches and dragons, and it's like all like solo plays. I really like Hero Realms and Star Realms. And you could also throw pretty much anything from White Wizard Games, because they also have Epic Card Game, and there's another one, which are all just kind of like card games. So they all fall in that $20 range. So do you guys have any others? Because I have some more, but...
I have two that are kind of similar. I have Rat-A-Tat-Cat and Three Wishes. I haven't actually played Three Wishes, so I've kind of appended it because it's similar in a way to this Rat-A-Tat-Cat game. So I'll start with Rat-A-Tat-Cat. Essentially, you have... it's a really good game for kids because it essentially just has cats and rats on as the pictures on these cards, and you put some in front of you, and you've got numbers in the corners. And the idea is to have the lowest number of when you add all your four cards together at the end of the game. And there's some special cards that allow you to peek or swap with, you know, your partner or the middle or the discard pile. But it's just very simple, very quick, easy to pick up and play. Deck of cards. And Three Wishes is kind of similar. I've just watched like a playthrough of it. And it looks really cool. It kind of a similar concept, but there's a little bit more you can do in terms of moving the cards around and swapping things with Three Wishes than you could with Rat-A-Tat-Cat. So there's a little bit more kind of really good, and it kind of expands to more players, Three Wishes, I think. So there's more kind of like people around the board and you're switching these cards around. So I quite like that, the idea that you can kind of switch these cards around to other people and kind of trying to think, okay, wait, I had the zero card with me that might end the game for me in Three Wishes, and I moved it to Kitty, and then Chris swapped it to him, and okay, I've got to keep that in mind, but then wait, where's the six? So it's kind of keeping it all in play and kind of trying to memorize everything. It's quite fun.
So Rat-A-Tat-Cat looks like a kid's game, or would you?
It's
so,
yeah, I would say it's a kid's game. Yeah, it's very simple
family game.
Yeah, but I've played it with Sylvia and really enjoyed it. So yeah. Yep.
And both of these, Rat-A-Tat-Cat and Three Wishes, are about the $10 range.
Yep.
On Amazon. So you could give both.
Yeah.
Wrap it together and someone's like, oh, I have two gifts.
It's pretty good.
All right, my last pick is a dexterity game, Suspend.
Ooh.
You have different sizes of kind of wire pieces with like divots in them, and you're trying to suspend them all into this kind of hanging tower thing. That's really fun. I think this one's only like $13 on Amazon. Yeah. So it's a quick, it's
so like one of those ones where you can like knock it all over and it just falls to pieces. That's cool.
Yeah. So you're trying to put your pieces on instead of trying to take pieces off.
Right.
So it's basically what are those things like that you put above a baby's crib?
Like a mobile?
Yeah. It's like, it looks like that's what you're creating. You keep hanging things on each other and they don't move, but you're trying to balance.
They do sort of though. They like they wobble in space. Yeah, it's really cool.
So you can kind of like, you're building this big tree of wires and then it's just kind of like slowly turning around. You're like, oh no, it's gonna fall apart.
It all hangs from like a hook. It starts with one hook at the beginning that one person has to put a piece on.
Nice. I would say this is probably of the games we've talked about so far, the best gift game for non-gamers.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to get, you know, just, all right, I want to get someone to play a game, put something on a table, this is the type of game that anybody can just sit down and play. It's kind of like, you know, Monkeys in a Barrel or all those games that are like just super easy. You know, Jenga, anyone, they're blocks of wood, but you throw it on a table and everybody's into Jenga all of a sudden. This is along those same lines. So if you're not really sure, you know, what game can I get my family that I know they'll want to play, this could be a pretty good game to do it. And then whoever wanted to play more, you can like, oh, well, I have this other game too if you want to play it. So it's going back into tricking people into playing the game. Let's see. I have a couple more. One that I really want to call out, though, is Celestia. So it's C-E-L-E-S-T-I-A. This one is from Quick Simple Fun Games. It retails at $30, so I think you can probably get it cheaper on Amazon. I'm not Googling
so
my own.
So you're breaking the rules.
Maybe. I said 20-ish.
I kind of break the rules.
Yeah. This one, I played this one at Dice Tower Con. And it was just one of those things where I was going by and we needed to get stamps on a card. And in order to get a stamp on the card, you had to sit down and do a demo for one of their games. I'm like, all right, whatever. So I'm like, all right, that one looks interesting. And I think I liked it way more than Sydney did. Like, she didn't dislike it, but it's a very interesting press your luck game. So what it is you're all on a hot air balloon and you're trying to get to the final city, which is hopefully called Celestia. And you have a number of steps to get through. Well, each one requires you to roll a number of dice. It starts out with 2 and it gets up to 4 or 5. And those dice all have different sides on them, obviously. That's what dice do. But there's different pictures on them. So like elements that may roll up. So if I get like 2 winds and a sun or something, I have a hand of cards. And then everyone else has to decide whether or not I actually have the cards available to do
2 wins and a fire.
Right.
You just said,
yeah. Can I complete what I just rolled? And they can say, no, I don't think you do it. So I'm going to jump off at this city because I think what's going to happen is the ship's going to crash because you don't have everything. Or other people are like, no, I'm going to stay on the ship because I think you have it. And if you have it, you play it because otherwise you crash and you're driving and you can't jump off. So you're going to have to go forward. So you go, and if you have it, you go forward. So it's a pressure luck to try to get further and further and further. Now, if you jump off the ship, you draw a card from that particular city you're in. So there's like 8 cities that you're going from one to another. And the further you go, the more points those cards potentially have. So after you've played through X number of rounds, whoever has the most points – actually, no, you're trying to get to a certain amount of points. So whoever gets to that number of points first wins the game, and then you play again, and you play again, and you play again. And there's other powers like jetpacks and things like that. So it's like, oh, I played the jetpack card because even though you crashed the ship, I flew off with the jetpack or something like that. But it's a really cute game. And I think it's one of those things that's very simple to learn, and it has a lot of table presence. You actually have to put together the little ship. It's like a cardboard standee, so you put all your pieces in the ship, and it moves along the thing. So that's Celestia, C-E-L-E-S-T-I-A.
That's cool. I'd check that out.
So I was almost going to bring it for you to bring to your board game party, but it didn't fit in the box.
No worries. Next time.
All right. Any final thoughts on giving gifts for work or whatever?
I have one more.
All right.
I forgot.
Bring it.
Tenzi.
Oh, Tom Vassell's not going to be happy with you, but
no.
Talk about it.
All right. Well, Tenzi, it's going back to the games for people who don't really like to play games. I would put this in that category. Nice. That's what reminded me. Was talking about Suspend. You said that. So, Tenzi, it's you get 4 sets of colored dice. They're just plain standard dice that you would see in any game, and it comes with a bunch of different rules to play a bunch of silly different games. Some of them you have to stack the dice, some of them you just have to, it's like Yahtzee, you're just trying to roll the same number. It's a racing game to see who can get there first. Really quick, really fun, really easy to play with kids,
easy to pick up. I think it's great.
And it comes for $20. You get 100 6-sided dice, so you get 10 dice of 10 different colors.
Wow.
It's
the one that I saw was like $13 for 4.
All right. Well, all right. So Tenzi, the actual practical, well, the one that's branded Tenzi is like $13 for 4 sets. There's another one here, $25 for looks like 7 sets.
That's crazy. That's so many dice.
Yeah. But it's basically just a bunch of 6-sided dice.
But you have to have the rule set to play the different games.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you're a very creative person, you could just buy a bunch of 6-sided die and make up your own games.
Yeah, there's one of these here is Tenzi's Party Pack with 77 ways to play Tenzi's.
Yes.
So it's sort of like it's almost like a deck of cards.
Yes.
In that here's some 6-sided dice and here's a whole bunch of rules that you can apply to those 6-sided dice.
Oh yeah.
It's like the Dumb Man's Pyramid Arcade.
Yeah. Yep. No, I think that's a good one, though, because it is one of those things where, you know, nobody's intimidated by dice.
No.
One of these days, we will do an episode on dice games. I just don't know what that game, what that episode would be like. So as soon as I can figure it out, and if anyone has any suggestions on how we would do an episode on dice games, let me know.
You call the topic dice games and then you start talking about dice games?
I feel like you're being me and Josh about this.
Am I being really too difficult on this?
It's weird. Right. Yeah.
Let me just go change next week's topic. All right. I will think more about dice games. Okay. I guess there are a lot of dice games if I just go outside of the realm of not six-sided dice, if I go with like Bang the Dice Game and Catan the Dice Game. We mentioned two or three today, so three now. All right. Have we exhausted this subject?
I believe so.
Thank God. So I do want to say, if you want to follow us, you can follow us on Facebook at Tabletop Game Talk Podcast. You can follow us at Twitter at Tabletop Game TLK. You can follow me on Twitter at Game Master Chris. You can leave us an iTunes review. We love iTunes reviews. I believe we have a new iTunes review from Chivenger, which I think is Terrence's handle. I'm not sure, but I think so. But it was a very nice review regardless. Also, if you want to support us on Patreon, even $2 a month gets you automatic entry into all of our contests. Yes, you can still email for extra entries, but you are automatically entered if you're a patron. And you can see more about that at tabletopgametalk.com/patron. Patreon. So that's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And for the rest of the rhetoric, I leave it to Josh.
Indeed. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Jiljam, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Alex Brown, Michael Ohl, Josh Arntz, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, John Merkel, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Mike Smith, Stefan, I haven't thought of anything funny, Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, Josh John Lewis, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Carl Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, and Cindy Lum. Until next week, when we talk about games based on existing IPs, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. You know, I've been thinking about changing the intro to include our last names so that people realize that Stefan Phillips is related to Josh Phillips.
He didn't even realize when I went home that I was doing all these funny things. I had to play them all for him. He was loving it when he finally heard it.